With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Johnny Owen, and this is the Best 11 podcast from TalkSport. Mark Webster and I ask our guests 11 questions all about their love of football, from their earliest memories of the game to how their matchday rituals have changed over the years. And at the end, they'll tell us their best 11, a team made up of anyone who's ever played for their club, along with a manager of their choice. Will they go for players they've seen in the flesh, or will they rely on reputation? Let's find out. Our guest today is a fine actor and director. A native son of Ireland, he's had a glittering career in TV, theatre and film. He co-wrote and starred in the 1991 comedy Hear My Song, and you may also know him as Alan Cox from The Jump or Martin Summers in Ashes to Ashes. He's more recently become hugely popular as Superintendent Ted Hastings in Line of Duty. It is, of course, the wonderful Adrian Dunbar. Adrian, welcome to your Best 11. Can you start by telling us who you support and why?
My team is Arsenal, and I support them because they won the FA Cup in 1971 in great style. And I was so enamoured with them and taken by that team and the nature of their performance and the day that was in it. Like a lot of young people, I just thought, that's my team. I love that team. And that's why I've been supporting Arsenal ever since.
So the very famous Charlie George crucifixion, yes. Sort of, and he looked like a rock star as well, didn't he?
The long hair, the lot. Yes.
Is that what sort of like sealed your love for them?
Yeah, that was it. It was a fabulous day.
Yeah.
It was a great occasion. It was the FA Cup at a time when people didn't think that the FA Cup was a lesser kind of, you know, achievement. You know, that's gone into the consciousness that I don't agree with. It's still a fabulous thing to win. It's got all the tradition. You know, it's become our cup, hasn't it, in many ways, you know, and, you know, it's great. It's something that happens in London. You were a London club, you know, and, you know, it gives us a bit of bragging rights over our neighbours and stuff like that. So it's always a great day out. It comes at the end of the season and it makes you feel good going into the downtime. So that's what's great about it.
I'm going to guess when you were a kid, though, that you wouldn't have been necessarily surrounded where you lived with Arsenal fans. Who would have been the big English sides that would have been supported by sort of your classmates and stuff?
Well, yeah, the teams that would have been... Well, of course, Manchester United would have been the main team,
right,
for obvious reasons in the 1960s. And, you know, 60s going into the 70s. And then there would have been a few Liverpool supporters, of course. And then then there would have been the odd Chelsea, maybe the odd Spurs supporter. But mainly also people supported Glasgow Celtic, of course.
Cool.
Yes.
Was, you know, there's a big, big, you know, following for the supporters clubs for Glasgow Celtic.
I was going to ask you about Adrian, because were you aware that, obviously you wouldn't have been aware, but that Arsenal are seen in this country as the kind of the North Irish team, you know, the team of Kilburn and those areas where a lot of Irish people settled in North London.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we've also always had some great Irish players through the team. There was, you know, of course, there was a time when we won the 5 minute final with Liam Brady. There was, you know, like 9 Irish players on the team. I mean, it was we've had periods, you know, where there's been loads of Irish players on the Arsenal team. Sadly, not as many these days, but, you know, there's not as many home based players playing in the Premiership, if you like, these days, because it's become so much big business and so forth. But, you know, back in those days, you know, Arsenal was a team that, you know, had a lot of Irish players from the north and the south. And so that was one of the reasons why I gravitated. But that kind of happened slightly later than that period.
Now, you were pioneering, Adrian, let's be honest. You were out there out there ahead of the curve. How about your earliest memories of football as a kid? Were you a bit of a player yourself?
Oh, I love playing football. Oh, I just love playing football. You know, I've been standing there, you know, pick me, you know, trying to stand, you know, and, you know, I always thought I was a lot better than I actually was, you know, which must have been slightly annoying for people. But I was used to playing around right back. You know, that seemed to be the position I always fell into. And but my earliest memories, the earliest memory I have of was really watching Celtic win the European Cup.
Right, yes.
I remember watching Celtic win the European Cup, and I remember the feeling that that produced. I mean, it was the most incredible thing. It'll never be done again. One of the greatest achievements in soccer, you know, and definitely even in world sport, Celtic winning the European Cup. You know, all those, the bunch of players all coming within 11 or 12 miles from where they were all born into a club. I mean, that will just never happen again. And the effect that it had on the community that I lived in Northern Ireland was massive. It kind of gave people, I'm sure, you know, Glasgow people will know absolutely, the amount of confidence. It just gave people confidence that things could be done. And I think, you could say that, you know, if Glasgow Celtic hadn't done it that year, you know, United might have struggled the year after, because that was the next big thing that happened, you know, watching United win the European Cup and you know, seeing George Best just treat everybody with his performance that night was absolutely incredible. He just treated everybody. He could have been playing a five-a-side game. You hear managers talking these days about, you know, players going out and having the confidence to play things, having to instill that in them. George didn't need that. You know, he went out as Busby used to say, you know, somebody wasn't listening to my team talk, because he'd go out there and say, right, we're gonna hang back the first 20 minutes. We're going to see you soak it all up. And George would go and score two goals. Yeah. So it was like, you know, that was the second big one. You know, it was Celtic, and that was like a milestone. I mean, a huge sporting milestone. And, you know, Glasgow's still living off the buzz of it, and I'm not surprised. And then you have, you know, United coming with all the backstory, you know, all the stuff that had happened to the team, you know, and all that stuff that fed into all that and made their win so significant. So those are my kind of earliest sporting football memories, you know. Those two.
Brilliant.
Quite a high standard.
Absolutely. Yes. Some great sporting events.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first game that you went to in a physical sense, Adrian?
Well, the first games, I mean, of course, I went to a lot of local games, you know, and there was a lot of my hometown of Inniskillen. There was Inniskillen Rangers, Inniskillen Town, you know, Lisbalaw, you know, good teams, you know, really good standard of football. Out the west, of Northern Ireland. And so I'd go and watch those games, of course. But the first game I went to in London in League Division One was, someone got me, I was a student, so I was skint, but somebody got tickets. I can't remember how. Somebody was given tickets to a West Ham game. And so the first game I went to was at Upton Park.
Of course it was.
And, he's cheering next to me.
I'm with you now, Adrian. Press on.
is that all right? Is it?
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good indeed.
And the sight lines weren't that good, because it was all standing.
True.
It was like everybody scrunched in, you know, but a great atmosphere. The thing I remember most about that day was how skillful Trevor Brooking was as a big man.
Yeah.
He had unbelievable feet. He was able to flick the ball, do all kinds of stuff. He was a revelation. Because I'd watched him, obviously, on the telly. But to see him actually, you know, I just thought, wow. You know, you just don't understand football and athleticism and see what great athletes these guys are until you get up close. And I think that's a lot. I think a lot of people forget that, you know, that if you go to a live game, it's like if you go to, a live dance event or a live, you know, you suddenly start to appreciate the athleticism and the, you know, the elegance and
good
the,
point.
I mean, you know, the first time I saw, you know, we saw Thierry Henry. I mean, just, you know, the movement of the guy.
So,
you know,
graceful.
The athleticism.
Yeah.
Graceful. The gracefulness of it. Trevor Brooking had a bit of that,
yes.
I thought. And so that was my first game. Yeah, it was very exciting.
And did you have a favourite player as a kid?
Yeah, I did have a favourite player. I mean, most people really loved George, of course, and rightly so. What a genius, you know. And he had everything, you know, the fifth Beatle. Yeah. He looked fabulous and all the rest of it. But, you know, I really had, Graw, as we say in Ireland, I really loved Dennis Law.
Yeah.
I liked Dennis. He was like a poacher. Yeah. When he scored a goal, he was just delighted. He was naughty. He had a glint in his eye. He was funny. You know, he was. I really liked him. I really, you know, he'd be there. He was holding his shirt in his hands. You know, it'd be freezing. He looked like he'd be really cold. It looked like some geezer had just come off the Hackney Marshes, sort of thing.
I remember somebody said once that if George was a Beatle, he was the Mick Jagger with the shirt just a bit down, more attitude.
Would Dennis Law always look like
snake hips,
like Rod Stewart?
Yeah, he did.
He always looked a bit of a rascal like Rod Stewart as well.
It's a great shout, Adrian.
He did. That was the thing that drew me to him, and he'd score great goals. He'd score overhead kicks, and he'd score all kinds of stuff. You know, he was always. And he was almost given it large once he had scored, you know, I really loved him. I really loved Dennis, yeah.
Once you got to, based in London, it was at the Guildhall, wasn't you? Were you living over sort of Barbican Way? Is that where you were based when you moved to London?
No, I was living on the Isle of Dogs, actually. That's where I was living.
What were you doing by way of going to Arsenal games? Did you have a set plan when you wanted to watch Arsenal?
Well, no, in those days, I mean, literally, you were skint. So I really didn't have any dough to get to the game. So we were just watching the games on telly all the time whenever we could. And, you know, and also I was delighted to find out that even amongst, you know, some airy fairy actors, there was a bunch of lads who just, you know, loved to watch the games. So we didn't really have the money to get to games, but we would go up and watch the games. And, you know, we'd go up to Highbury now and again, hang out. Go around, you know, maybe be in the pub, watch the thing. But it was expensive, you know.
Yeah,
it was expensive. We didn't know anybody, really, at that point. We didn't have any contacts or anything like that. It wasn't until later on when I'd meet a few actors who had, you know, got season tickets or something like that, that you'd start to go in. But I started all through the 90s. I was there, the late 80s, all through the 90s. I started to go to Highbury and the North Bank and, fantastic days on the North Bank in Highbury. Fantastic.
It's funny, yeah. Adrian, because you know, I've spoken to you about this. You were a well-known actor, but in the Indian summer, as you said to me once, of your career, you've now, let's be fair, become a household name on Line of Duty. And there's a wonderful photograph of you in the FA Cup final, which I loved, which a newspaper took, and the joy on your face. Aaron Ramsey has just scored, hasn't he? And looks like Arsenal are going to win the cup final. And Mark was saying that the days from being a student when you had to travel across London and it was difficult for you. What is it like now for you to go to Highbury? Do you go to the new stadium and do you know people there?
Yeah, I go to the Emirates, and you know, I've been very lucky that I've I can count, you know, Liam Brady as a friend. I've met Liam over the years, and so, you know, I might, you know, meet Liam at the start of the game, and he'll introduce me to a couple of people, and you know, we get a nice seat. All the seats are good at the Emirates, but I used to have season tickets, but you know, it's really difficult because, you know, like a lot of people, I was. Oh God, who's this?
Don't know how to turn it off, do you?
I'm just gonna text this person.
No worries, you took your time.
Live on radio. What was that? What was that last?
I don't know if I've mentioned this, but it just tickled me. I found this out because Liam Brady obviously turned up at West Ham, and you mentioned Indian Summers, and he was a fantastic player at West Ham, and I was writing a piece about him in the programme, and of course he was called Chippy, and I just always assumed it's because of that wand of a foot of his, and it transpires he was called that since kid because he liked chips.
I know you would have thought it was because he can chip anything, but no, it's apparently that's the story.
Brilliant.
What a genius player, and
beautiful
and,
player to
of
watch.
Course oh yeah Oh, yeah. No, there was somebody who just had time on the ball. But I remember that what Johnny was saying earlier about Aaron Ramsey arriving in, and it's really sad we lost Aaron. You know, and went the same way as Liam, really. I mean, we should never have sold Liam Brady. We should never, you know, let him go. He went off to Juve. He won the league for them, you know.
True, he did, yeah.
I mean, it was, we made a mistake there. And yeah, he's absolutely loved as one of the club's greatest ever players. And definitely, probably, he's my greatest player for my Ireland 11. So, which I'd like to talk to you about maybe a little later.
Coming up,
on.
There's a little tease.
Stick with us. Can I just, I mean, it's always worth asking an Arsenal fan this. Do you spend too much time comparing the Emirates with Highbury and the experience? Is it something that you think about much?
Yes, because, you know, it's like you can't help thinking back, well, we lived for 23 years in that house and then we moved house and we came here and... Mm. You know, I mean, there was an atmosphere there. There was, you know, and listen, the thing about football is, in football grounds, is that they're like churches or anything like that, arenas. You know, people come every week, thousands of people. They go in there and they leave all this emotion behind them. And when you go to the Camp Nou or the Bernabeu and all that, yeah, you know, I'm sure that you walk in there and you know that this is ritual space.
Mm.
And you know that people have left all this emotion in there behind them over the years. And what we did was, you know, we left the place where we had invested all our emotion for years and years and years. And for some people, it was their whole lives.
Yeah.
Some people at Arsenal, like Sue Tully, people like that, who've been going since they were 2 or 3 years. I mean, Sue Tully is a memory of lifting the ball out of the gully and handing it to Pat Rice when she was about 4 years or 5 years of age. Her dad lifted her over the barrier. You
fantastic.
Know,
that's
people
have
been going there three, four generations, you know, and left there. And then you've got to go to somewhere that's brand new, that's antiseptic. And, you know, it's just, and of course, everybody's split up. People over the years, they knew who was around them. They knew that, you know, they'd shift seats because they wanted to be in this particular part of the crowd or this particular part of the crowd. So there was big concentrations of fans in certain areas of the ground, you know, the West Bank or the North Bank. And, you know, we used to, you know, sing each other out and stuff like that. And suddenly everybody was all over the place. There was no cohesion. And for years, there's been no cohesion at the Emirates, but it's starting to. And now, of course, we got COVID, so that's killed it all. But it was starting to get together and starting to find out where everybody was going to be. Yes, the North Bank was going to be behind that goal. Let's put the clock back up there. Let's try and get some sense of Highbury back into the ground.
Yeah.
And I know they used to always call it Highbury, the library and that. But, we... We used to wait to see something happening, you know.
And,
it's a very it's a very London crowd, isn't it?
Yeah,
impressed me first. Yeah.
You know, how's the team set up? You know, how are we approaching this? You know, but there's a great buzz about the place. I'm joining you at a great point in Arsenal's history, I think.
Yeah.
There's a great buzz about the place. We seem to have found someone who understands the club and its values and understands players. And is a great tactician, and yeah, I'm very, for the first time in many years, I'm really confident that we have a plan and a manager who's going to take us forward, and back to where we think we should be, which is a top four team qualifying for Europe. You know, it is difficult to see the draws being made and us not in it, and stuff like that. So, I know nobody's got a divine right to do any of that. Of course they haven't. But, we are a big club. We've got great support. And, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed we can start making inroads.
Brilliant. Adrian, have you got a favourite piece of memorabilia or a memento?
I don't, actually. I was thinking about this. Do I have something? I mean, the one thing I do have is a replica 1971 shirt. But I've got shirts from all... I've got kit from different periods, you know. I've got the JVC kit, obviously, and I've got the old And that was the other thing, you know, the old kit from the 90s, just the long sleeved red, very simple, you know, the kit that Brady would have worn. And those guys in the 70s. I mean, that kit is a great kit. And sometimes, because that was kind of like a replica of the 30s kit.
Yes.
And sometimes we'd be playing, you know, a midweek match in the evening at Highbury, and the lads would be wearing that kit, and the sun would be in the summer, and the sun would be shining on the pitch. It was like sometimes you could be like transported back in time. It was like you were back in the 19. It was Ted Drake, you know. You're back in the 1930s or whatever it was, and you were kind of, you know, you were watching, you were looking at the past, and those are the things, of course, that you lose slightly when you move to a new ground. It's a difficult transition moving to a new ground. It is.
Have you got a favourite player now?
Well, of course, you know, you got to love Aubameyang. I mean, he has stuck with us, and, you know, there's a lot of clubs would have been looking at him. He's got great energy. He's fun. He loves the game. You know, he works really hard. He's a model professional, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I do like Tierney. He's got great intelligence. He sees the game really well. He acts really early on things. He's great at releasing Aubameyang. And, you know, we missed him for a couple of weeks there, and you would miss him out of the squad and out of the team. So I'm really delighted he's with us. I think it was a great buy. And so he's like my kind of favourite player at the minute. I'm hoping we keep him injury free. That's the thing.
He had a bit of a stutter start, didn't he, because of injuries. But what you can see, he looks like the kind of guy that you could really build that defence around, which wouldn't be a bad idea at Arsenal, would it?
No, it wouldn't be a bad idea at all. I mean, the thing about Kieran Tierney, though, is as well, you know, that, you know, when he was at Celtic, he played loads of games for Celtic when he was quite young.
Yeah.
You know, so he's been working really hard. Hopefully we can construct a really good back four over the next while. Bellerin has been one of the best fullbacks in the English league for years and years now. I mean, you know, we've kind of, you know, you don't see what he does. He's a fantastic player. He really is. And he's done a couple of, you know, things recently, which has made us realise what a great player he is again. And so we have players across the back. But, you know, we have a tradition of having a great back four. We had one of the best back fours ever in the league. So, yeah. We have quite a high standard. And to get that kind of understanding that, you know, your Bowles and the Keons and the Dixons and the, you know, the Adams is, you know, had amongst themselves, it takes a couple of years. So we're in the making. That's the thing. We're in the making.
I just wanted to tap on this just quickly because I love talking to Arsenal fans about this. If you were an Arsenal fan when I was a kid, I mean, they took great delight in being Arsenal, you know,
yes,
having the most organised team, the famous back four, step out, you know, where they claim an offside, you know, boring Arsenal. That.
Tony Adams playing with his arm constantly in the
air,
of course.
A complete almost turnaround in philosophy, and they turned into this swashbuckling team, you know,
what's
Barcelona of British football. That must have been quite interesting to sort of live through, Adrian, if you know what I mean.
Yes, no, it was. It was fantastic. I mean, George Graham, you know, I mean, the point about it is that that's how you see it now. But you have to look at it to 5 or 6 years before all those things were happening, you know. But George came along. George did really well. He settled the team. He got that 1-0 thing going on. And everybody, we got the super care being boring Arsenal. You know, other teams are winning 1-0. That never happened to them. Anyway, in comes one of the greatest managers of all time. And rather like Klopp in Liverpool, but not quite, but rather like when Klopp went to his first big club, nobody really knew who Arsene Wenger was.
Yeah, true.
We didn't know what he was doing. And he brought in a whole philosophy, but he also brought in there was a lot of aggression in, you know, coming from managers in English football and kind of being aggressive about what they're doing. And here comes this guy who's got a much more compassionate idea of how to treat footballers and how to tease out of them their best performances and get them up to speed and giving 100% and doing it for different reasons other than kind of being in fear of something or being aggressive towards someone else. I did not see.
What about when Ian Wright helped? I did not see what Twitter's...
I think I did not see was the right thing. You don't want your manager coming out going, yeah, I saw that. He was terrible. He's not playing next week.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, come on.
It's a very, very sophisticated answer. Correct, Adrian. Yes, I agree with you entirely.
Thank you.
Now, you touched on earlier that you kind of have something of a collection of vintage shirts as sort of like your memorabilia collection. But do you have a favourite from the Arsenal shirts?
Yeah, it's got to be the 71 shirt.
Fair enough.
71 shirt.
Great colour.
Great colour.
You mean the away shirt.
Is it away?
The away shirt, yeah. The yellow and blue.
Yeah, the yellow and blue. Yeah, it's our away shirt, yeah. I mean, we went a bit wrong when there's a mad one that got yellow and black and all kind of
the
mad,
banana.
You know. Yeah, the banana, mate. No, none of us like that. But, I mean, all clubs have got a real nutcase shirt at some point, don't they?
True, yeah.
But, that's the one. That's the one. It's there's something about it. It's got a, and of course, you know, it's got a kind of Brazil vibe about it.
Yeah. Do you know what? The whole kit did, didn't it, really? That's right. And there was, and you going all the way back to the point you're making, I remember distinctly that cup final because, as you say, it's the classic one where people say it's always sunny on FA Cup final day. And that's the game that will remind you of
that. What's interesting as well is how much human emotion is tied into it and nostalgia because obviously the great kits like Forest's European Cup winning kit is famous because they won the European Cup in it.
Yeah.
You know, Arsenal kit is
famous. It comes
famous.
In handy.
Yeah, because
it?
You know that Charlie George and that iconic image, Manchester United's 1968 blue European Cup. It's almost the top becomes synonymous with a great event, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, true.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's it. What it's representative of, the best of the club.
Yes,
you know that. You know that's what it's representative of. It's great.
We're just going to ask you, I mean...
Next.
I've got a feeling, I've got a feeling I might know the answer to this. Have you got another team other than Arsenal that you've got a soft spot for?
Well, of course, Celtic I've got a soft spot for. Yeah. You know, I really do. It's kind of, the supporters are great. I mean, if you've ever been to any of their games, it's just a party. Mm. And, you know, I've been to a few Celtic games. Of course, Martin Compston here. Is a huge Celtic fan.
Yes.
And and they're just great crack. But the other team I always really liked from back in the 70s was Ajax.
Yeah.
Oh,
I've always had a thing about Ajax. I've always loved the way they had this philosophy really early on, the way they brought young players through, the way they weren't afraid to throw young players into really big games and kind of, I mean, you see the players who come out of there over the years, you just see what a great hothouse Ajax has been and the total football idea, you know, fantastic club. You know, I just love clubs that kind of bring a kind of philosophy to the game with them. You know, I think that's special to have that about a club. I think it's special.
Yeah, but listen, the very point you're making, John, if you've got this young Dutch side that play that particular way and you've got guys like Johan Cruyff and Neeskens playing in that side, then you've got that shirt, the white shirt with the massive broad red stripe. You're going to be iconic, whatever way you look at it, aren't you?
Do you know, I found a great thing out today about Cruyff that you two will love. One of his pre-match rituals was he always chewed gum and then spat the gum in the opposition's half just before a game.
Oh, really? Staked his claim?
Almost did him. And this one time he forgot. He didn't have any gum and he went out and they lost the game 4-1. This is Ajax. So he always made sure that he had some gum before a game. And you love the idea of this, you know, one of the great footballers, you know, the way he moved, we talked about earlier on, a wonderful athlete, great with the ball. But actually, chewing gum was really important and where he spat it to how he played.
The thing about Cruyff, though, is that here's the thing. And him and Brady are very similar because, you know, a lot of people say, you know, neither of them had what you would call incredible speed.
No.
But both of them seem to have huge amounts of time on the ball.
Yeah.
They just seem to be able to make time, you know, to give themselves time. It's unbelievable quality to have as a footballer.
Yes.
And which is why I believe both of them would still do well, even now in the game as it is today. Even with the pressing game, I still think that they would be able to marshal the midfield, to find the time, to make the pass, you know, it's you know, I think they're both on a par, really. I'd put them both on a par.
It's a great point. I always remember the great Barry John saying, it wasn't particularly quick, but was able to just go past people. And he said something, and Muhammad Ali said something very similar. He said, I see everything in slow motion.
Yeah.
What a great line that is. So as a human being, he was just able to predict and to see what others, you know, couldn't.
So what was happening around him was almost irrelevant, wasn't it? He was in his own little world,
And it's really into all the top sports people have that, as you said, Adrian. I see
there's an interesting thing, actually. There's an interesting thing that happened. I remember reading years ago about this thing about seeing things in slow motion.
Mm.
And I think it was Nigel Mansell was out in America. They were promoting the F1 in America and seeing that could they get them off the ovals at Indianapolis and get them into a kind of, a street circuit game.
Yeah.
And so anyway, Nigel was out there and he was at one of the baseball. They brought him to Yankee Stadium. And of course, every time you go to Yankee Stadium and that, they kind of said, you want to try and, you know, hit a few balls. And of course, he went, yeah, all right. So it might be a part of, you know, one of the stories. But anyway, story is he went out and they got a pitcher in and he hit like three balls out of six or seven and they were absolutely astounded. And when they said to him, how are you doing that? He says, well, look, in Formula One, he said, you have to think faster. It's about thinking faster so that you can slow the action down.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. The faster you think, you can slow the action down. And so I think those players are, and those people, it's like that. You're just thinking so fast. I mean, to be a 100-meter runner, you have to think fast. If you can't think fast, you can't run that fast.
Mm.
So that's kind of something that I think is a quality of great sports people. They're thinking so fast, they're slowing the action down.
Yeah,
it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Great point.
This is the Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Adrian, tell us about your best 11. You're going to pick a very specific best 11, aren't you? I love it.
Yes, I'm picking an All-Ireland 11.
Very nice.
Very nice. Like a bit like the rugby team does, only for football, which I think is a wonderful
idea.
Which I
love. Oh, well, looking forward to this, because, of course, I can't think I've seen this before.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And an abundance of riches here if you've got an All-Ireland team. So, take us
through
it. Let us know your goalkeeper.
Yes, right, okay. I'm going 4-4-2, okay? So, goalkeper, you know, we've got, like, this great keepers like Shea Given, Harry Gregg going back, but it's got to be Pat Jennings.
Yes.
I was just mouthing that to our young producer.
Yeah.
What a goalkeeper, Pat Jennings.
Yeah.
Biggest hands in football, as they used to say, even there.
Yeah, Pat. Pat's the only person I know whose hand goes the whole way around a pint glass.
his fingers touched, did they? That's another thumb and finger touching. Well, and he did
yes, mate.
What you've described earlier. His goalkeeping was in slow motion. He He read so much of what was going to happen before it happened.
Yeah, absolute unbelievable goalkeeper, and could do. I mean, he that thing where he used to kind of he'd be in midair, his hand would be out, he'd have the ball, and his fingers would flick the ball down his arm so that when he hit the ground, the ball would be just nestled.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's ridiculous,
unbelievable, unbelievable,
ridiculous.
Great so then we've got. Yeah, right back, I'm going with, you know, because we got, like, you know, there's Seamus Coleman and at the moment, who's a great right back, but I'm going Dennis Irwin.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got Dennis Irwin in at right back. Absolutely, you know, somebody who can, you know, great shot on him, kind of good on the overlap, solid, never put a foot wrong.
And in United 11s more often than not as well,
isn't
he?
Always in people's United 11, Dennis Irwin. Absolutely interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yes, that's what. Well, Alex Ferguson said he was the first name on the team sheet.
Yeah. That says everything.
Says everything. Yep. Absolutely.
Got Irwin. So
we got Ireland. So we're going across the back four, and you know, we got people like Ronnie Whelan and you know, Dave O'Leary.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm going Paul McGrath.
Oof.
God, as they call him, Villa fans still call him God, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Paul McGrath, you know, talk about reading the game.
Yeah,
that's very good.
I mean,
good point.
Nobody ever was in the right position as much as Paul McGrath.
Even when his knees were gone, couldn't he? Yeah.
He was just there. He just read the game so well. Really kind of calm presence in there, passing the ball out of defence. Mark Lawrenson, I'm going beside him.
Nice.
You know.
Rolls Royce.
Yeah, I'm going for Mark Lawrenson because big, strong centre-half, great motivator, great at pushing the team on, very kind of, you know, making himself useful in the opposition box at corners and stuff like that.
Upright.
Really, really
a very
great
upright player wasn't he? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a few players, or a couple of players putting their hands up for left back, but I'm going for a player called Noel Cantwell.
Yes.
And
of course, a West Ham connected name. That's where where he broke through, wasn't it, as West Ham?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Noel Cantwell's in there. And there was Con Martin as well across the back four, but, you know, Lawrenson. So Cantwell, Irwin, McGrath, Lawrenson, Cantwell across
Lovely.
The back four.
Lovely.
Then middle of the park, I'm going Danny Blanchflower.
Nice.
Fair enough.
I'm going Liam Brady.
Yeah.
John Giles.
Yep.
And Andy Townsend.
Ooh. Oh. Now, Townsend's name does sound, you might argue, a little bit unusual in that company. But let me put it like that. Would that be unreasonable?
It would be unreasonable to say that. But here's the thing. You know, I know everybody's going to be putting their hands up for Roy, but for me, you know, Andy Townsend, Andy Townsend was the first player on Jack Charlton's team sheet.
Good point.
And right. The reason why is that he was a player, he killed any space, you know, that was being created. He was great at closing people down. He was great in front of the back four. He did loads of work that you didn't see. He's one of those really, really brilliant players whose work you don't really see. And, you know, I'm looking for a settled team here.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's certain personalities that you just know will be cohesive across that midfield. And with John Giles and Liam Brady, they're two pretty tough.
You've got some passing there, haven't you, Adrian?
Yes. Passing.
You've got some left feet, you've got left feet, you've got right feet, you've got, you know, and Danny Blanchflower, one of the great, great players of all time.
Fantastic.
Great mention. Great mention. Yes. Like
double,
it.
Double winner with Spurs and all sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got, you know, so you've got, you know, you got Martin O'Neill across there as well, you know, of course. Mm. It's tough decisions to make in there. And then, of course, you know, who do you play up front? You've got Aldridge, Stapleton, you know, you've got the great Peter Doherty, Jimmy Dunn, you know, there's great players up there in front, but I'm going for, I can't leave George out.
George
cannot leave George out. So I'm going George Best, and I'm going the great Charlie Tully from Celtic.
Right.
Charlie Tully, you know, he could do things way before anybody else was doing it. He's the first player, one of the first players. I mean, he scored, for example, I think he scored against England from a corner. The referee didn't know what to do. It was the first time anybody had ever done it. He made him take it again. He scored from a corner again.
Wow.
The stories about him are legion and legendary. Him coming in off the left wing, passing, you know, doing things, setting George up, George taking it past two or three players. I mean, you know, it's not bad. So
not
that's
too shabby.
That's my
not
kind of
too shabby.
Not too shabby. And as for a manager for that team, I'm going to go Mick McCarthy. And the reason I'm going Mick McCarthy is because I think Mick was really underrated as a manager. And I think of a couple of things that have gone his way through his career. If certain things had happened the right way for him, we'd have been looking at Mick as kind of one of our greatest managers, especially for an Ireland team. Mm-hmm. I thought he got great work out of players. He got great loyalty out of players. He was loyal to players. So I'm going to go with Mick. And
he had a great club career as well. I really loved
the
way Mick
Can I just ask you then quickly, Adrian? I mean, the whole Keane thing in that infamous, you know, World Cup incident where he flies back from Saipan. Where did you stand on all that? What did you make of it all?
My feeling is that you put your country before any of your personal stuff in that situation. And, you know, I felt that, you know, it's a contentious thing. And, of course, Roy Keane he's a fabulous footballer. I mean, you know, come on. He's one of the greatest players we ever had, a motivational player. I mean, where would United have been without him sometimes? Drumming them up, pushing them on, you know, and being an enforcer for Alex, you know, when he needed somebody to kind of drum somebody up or focus somebody and all the rest of it. But, you know, there are times in, you know, when, you know, and I don't, nobody really know the full story. I don't know the full story, but I just think, you know, the way it played out, I was disappointed because we had a really good chance.
Oh, I mean, you'd beaten Germany, right?
Right on the cusp.
You're right on the cusp.
Yeah.
And you do have to think.
Right,
Roy Keane and that team, a bit like what Wales had with Bale, you could have got to a semi-final and then anything can happen, can't it?
Even in your fantasy All-Ireland team, you've been very wise not to put Roy Keane in the midfield with Mick McCarthy as the manager.
Yeah,
very
exactly.
Smart, Adrian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Adrian,
yeah,
it's been an absolute pleasure to
Brilliant,
have you on.
Mate,
thank you so much for joining us and good luck with the rest of filming. Gentlemen, thanks, Adrian.
Loved it.
The Best 11 podcast from Talk Sport.
Thank you for listening to the Best 11 podcast. Don't forget there are new episodes out every Monday and Thursday. So join us for more football memories and another Best 11 very soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.